Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. In podcast 738, we haven't done a walk and talk in a long time, and I am out here on a beautiful, perfect summer night after the storms, with more storms approaching. It is about midnight. The trees are just full of sodden with water, with branches hanging down, and the smell in the air is just amazing. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to go do a walk and talk. I have been doing a lot of prep, which means I'm back to reading pages and pages and pages of news on a day-to-day basis. And I'll talk about that and talk about why in this podcast. And so I thought, you know what, it's a good time to just quick grab the recorder and head outside, because the, rules of the walk and talk are no prep. In other words, no organized plan for the podcast and no editing. So we are going to do a walk and talk in podcast 738 in mid-July, the peak of summer in Minnesota. Well, it has been raining off and on and storming off and on. It's been great. I'm going to talk about air conditioning in this podcast in a little bit, this walk and talk podcast. And it's funny because I really didn't intend to bring up air conditioning, but, you know, I don't like using air conditioning. And getting a little wind out here this evening as storms kind of start to blow in. But I got to mention Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul for home or business, because right now, you know, you are probably, if you haven't turned on your AC already, you will. And you want to make sure that it's actually working efficiently. So I will throw in the pitch for Ryan Plumbing and Heating to come out and check the AC, just because when it comes to keeping all these systems operating these days at home or your business, when you have plumbing or heating or air conditioning problems, you want reliable service. Of course, that means Ryan Plumbing and Heating. They've been in St. Paul's Frogtown for four generations. 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, you can call 612-927-6488. Online at ryanplumbing.com. Now, they started out in the spring dealing with a lot of issues that came from a cold winter. So heating issues and also just plumbing issues and things of that nature, that is starting to slow down. So it's a great opportunity if you're looking at putting in a new bathroom, if you're looking at putting in floor heating in the garage or the basement. This is a great time to have Ryan come out, see what you're doing, and give you a bid. Again, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems for four generations in St. Paul. You call 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Check out their website online. A lot of content and cool stuff at ryanplumbing.com. Now, for you guys subscribing and listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, if you want to see Mobile Podcast Command, I'm going to be in the Pana Prague Parade this weekend. So look for Mobile Podcast Command in the parade. And thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, Google Play. Somebody said to me, how do I get the podcast? What do I do? You can use the podcast app on your iPhone. There's podcast apps for Android devices. Stitcher works best with Android devices. iTunes, of course, as always. TuneIn also is good for Android devices. Google Play actually sounds really good. Blog Talk Radio sounds really good. That's at blogtalkradio.com. And they also have gotten into a partnership with Spreaker. So if you know about Spreaker, you can check me out on Spreaker as well. Appreciate the likes and the favoriting and the following. Found out today that Kylie Jenner, isn't that how you say her name, is a billionaire, and she says that social media is an amazing platform. So make me a billionaire. Check me out on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and thanks for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com. So yeah, I am out here tonight, and it is perfectly still. So if you can hear around me, you know, if you can, I'll just put the microphone around me here so you can hear this perfectly still experience that we're having out here. And the smells are amazing. You know, I'm being taken back to the days when I had my fort in the backyard and I'd run around in the yard at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, just this incredible high summer smell. And of course, we've got lightning. And an occasional little bit of thunder as we, looks like we're going to have thunderstorms coming in. So hopefully I can get this podcast done in the next 30 minutes. But, You know, it's that stillness that comes before a storm, or maybe just stillness from just all the humidity and everything else. But so far, no breezes, which means that I'll probably get this done before the storm starts, but the lightning is fantastic. So I'm here walking around, and, you know, I'm going to talk about the weather a little bit because I think that's really interesting. So read this piece by, I've forgotten the guy's name. I think it's something to the effect of Peter Trummel. I think that's his name. Trummel, T-R-U-M-M-E-L, who wrote this piece that said, you know, I turned off my AC for the summer and you should too. And there are all these reasons for, you know, it's good for the environment and, you know, it saves me money and I don't have much money and I'm on a tight budget and I'm going to be able to put in tulips and stuff or do stuff in my yard or buy, I don't know. And I had to laugh because I have not turned on the air conditioning at all. Despite my little, you know, commercials for Ryan Plumbing and Heating, I haven't turned on the AC in my house yet this year. It is, in fact, the little bar is still on the heat. I haven't turned it over to AC, and the thermostat's all the way up, so, you know, the heat's not going to come on. But I have not turned on the AC. And the reason is I don't like AC because it separates me from this fantastic thing called summer. And so we've had 100 degree days. We've certainly had a lot of humidity and heat. Usually it dissipates at night and I'm able to sleep, but I haven't turned the AC on. And I didn't do it for some statement. I didn't do it to get credit for it. I didn't do it because I can't afford to have it on or anything else. I mean, it's nice because the electric bill goes way down. But I haven't turned the AC on in my house for probably 3 years. I think I turned it on once about 2 summers ago when it was really hot. And of course, last summer it wasn't hot at all. So we never turned on the AC. And that brings me to this question because, you know, I've noticed a couple of these articles as well about how, oh, this heat, you know, the whole country is in this incredible heat and this is global warming and so forth and so on. And I should say climate change, but I say global warming because that's what they mean. And I just want to say, you know, this is a classic Minnesota summer. This is a classic Midwestern summer that we're having where, you know, you get heat and the heat comes fairly early and it's fairly consistent. And of course, most Minnesotans can't stand it. And I do so much hot yoga, I don't even know. Like when it's 100 degrees, I think it's 80. You know, I don't even notice how hot it is. It doesn't really affect me at all. It does kind of, you know, the heat does kind of take the energy out of you. It slows you down and it kind of takes your energy a little bit. But, you know, the thing that's cool, and this is the thing I wanted to say. So we will have this heat probably until just before Labor Day. So the heat will break in Minnesota. This is going to be the first use of the term state fair in the Bob Davis podcast. But the state fair is at the end of August for a reason, because the state fair is usually the week before the state fair, the weather breaks, and the humidity leaves. And the first thing that you notice is it's still hot, right? But the humidity is gone. And so it seems more comfortable. And of course, the evenings are cooler, but it's still, you know, 75, 80, 85, 90. But that humidity has completely dissipated. And that's what will happen. And of course, it will happen on schedule like it does every year. You know, our weather here is like clockwork. Memorial Day or thereabouts, it starts to get warm. If it's going to be a hot summer, it'll get really warm. Then summer will progress. And then by the end of August, it's over. And you can feel it. Now, that lots of people think that's the best part of the whole year. Best time to go camping. Best time. That was a huge water, you know, bubble that came down from one of these trees. You know, best time to have fires in the backyard, you know, because it's cool at night. Best time for the whole thing. I like this part of summer. The warmer, the better, and especially at night. And humidity. Right now, it's not that humid, actually. Maybe it is humid. I just don't notice it. But it just feels great out here. And we have low clouds, so it seems kind of bright out here right now. But we have this clockwork weather, and guess what? You know, it's gonna cool off, the humidity's gonna disappear, and we're gonna have this beautiful fall. And of course, we've had so much rain and there's so much foliage that we're gonna have a beautiful fall because the trees are so full. And I just love that. And What else was I going to say? Something else about it that I think is important. Oh, yeah, it's the clockwork thing about weather in Minnesota, and people forget. You know, we have cool summers, we have hot summers. This one's probably going to end up being a little on the hot side, which doesn't bother me in the least. Some people don't like it. I don't care. The hotter the better, as far as I'm concerned. So that is my whole thing about the weather. Somebody said that hot weather makes people stupid. That's, you know, but I have found that it's easier to cope with hot weather if you don't turn the AC on, because, and I don't want to, I'm not writing an article about it to take credit for the fact that I don't use the AC. If you want to use your AC, more power to you. Go use your AC. But I don't, because the heat doesn't bother me, so I just don't turn it on. And yeah, I do it to save a little money too, but I'm not keeping the AC off to save money. I have some friends coming, and we'll probably have to turn it on because they're from Massachusetts. And if they're anything like Minnesotans, you know, they're going to complain if it's, you know, they're probably used to having it 65 degrees at night when they sleep, which I don't understand. So it's fragrant. It smells great out here. We're waiting for the storm to roll in, and it's a wonderful evening. So we're going to talk about a couple of things real quick, and then I'm going to go inside and turn the TV on. But so there's a bunch of stuff going on. It's weird how I have been avoiding perusal of the news to the degree that I am used to doing for a long time. And so recently I've decided, you know, I'm kind of missing some important details, so I got to get delving back into it. So every day I've been reading anywhere between 100 and 200-300 pages of material. And I haven't been reading source material, so I haven't been reading Supreme Court decisions or bills or things like that. But I've been reading, you know, what I'll do is I'll go through and I'll pull, you know, a bunch of articles about something and read them in detail. And the reason for that is it gets you up on the details of these stories, which sometimes, you know, the devil's in the details. And if you know the details of certain stories, then you can see these storylines developing. And the way I look at it now is I don't even need to talk about the storylines because, you know, they're usually a disservice in one way or another. But everybody in the media, you know, works off of storylines. They basically write a story that's completely made up, and then they can go back to that story or refer to that as a concept again and again and again to voice an opinion. And so every now and then you got to delve back in and read in depth, because it's the only way to see these storylines and to understand what is being done to us from a manipulative standpoint in the news media. And I want to talk about two or three of those stories in this podcast. Well, I'm working with a new company called ReliaFund. Actually, I've been working with these guys for quite a while, and I'm excited about what they do. They are a payment processor. And so if you are a small business, medium-sized business, or large business looking for a great payment processor, listen up. If you're a developer and you are developing back-office systems for a business or developing a website for a business, listen up, because this message is for you. So businesses today are really looking for good payment processors, because these days, everybody wants to pay electronically. It's faster. It's faster both to deliver the payment and also better to receive the payment, you know, electronically, because you get paid faster. And that's what it's all about. A lot of my clients are interested in figuring out how to take credit card payments and getting a better rate. This is all stuff ReliaFund can help you with. They can work with other payment processors. They can work with credit card payment systems. They can work to help you do back office stuff. They have apps. They are a great payment processor. ReliaFund has been in business for more than two decades. They are, you know, they don't have any long-term contracts. They're secure. They are technology-focused. 866-243-5040, or check them out online at ReliaFund.com, R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D, ReliaFund.com. If you call them at 866-243-5040, that's 866-243-5040, you are going to talk to a human being, either Kevin Hill or Greg Lowry. Great guys. I'll be telling you more about ReliaFund in the future. You can also click on the ReliaFund banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. The first story I want to talk about is the trade story. Now, I guess it was podcast 737. I felt that it was necessary to give subscribers and listeners a history of trade legislation in the United States and History of Trade Philosophy in the United States. And I did that podcast because I wanted to give people some background on trade that wasn't part of the rhetorical battle and the part of the partisan battle lines that passes for coverage in this country all the time. And I have still not seen an article yet from anyone that says, hey, by the way, maybe it's important for you to know what American trade policy was in the 1840s. Someone finally mentioned Smoot-Hawley in one of the stories, but there was no detail about what Smoot-Hawley was. Most people don't have any idea what Smoot-Hawley was. If I were to be on the radio and I were to say, we're going to talk about trade, except here's what we're going to do. I'm going to take calls, something I hate to do, but I'm going to do it. And I'm going to ask people, without blaming Trump or Obama or anybody else, without taking a side, I would like to hear the history of trade legislation in the United States. Go. And first caller, let's see what you know. Second caller, let's see. You educate all of us on the history of trade in the United States. I'll bet you wouldn't get a single call because most people don't know that information. And I wouldn't know it either unless I had taken the time to look it up. So the whole rule would be you can't Google anything. You just got to. We're going to grab the first three calls and we're going to make them give us, hey, by the way, I know you called to talk about this. Guess what? I'm going to ask you a question. Give me the history of U.S. trade legislation starting now. You get 30 seconds. Go. I think that people would be shocked at how little we know about trade legislation, trade protection, the development of the income tax to get away from tariffs and now what's a tariff and on and on and on. I didn't know. I did that. And I researched that story because I wanted to share that information with people. I wanted people to know the basis for that. And as I said in that podcast, the conclusion is, you know, both parties have flipped. You know, if you include the Republicans, they only go back to the 1860s. But the Whigs and the Democrats, and then later the Republicans and the Democrats, flipped position on trade protection several times. You know, the Republicans at one point were for high tariffs. The Democrats were for low tariffs. And so trade as a foreign policy issue and trade as an economic issue has been important to different regions of the country for a long time. You know, just like banking and money and stock markets and, policy in terms of legislation has been important since the turn of the century, you know, with farmers and everything else. This is the same thing with trade. But, okay, so Trump has slapped some tariffs on the Chinese and the Canadians and the Europeans and, you know, and everyone's talking about it. But here's what's happening already that I think is fascinating. And it's happening from every quarter. Now, he did this last Friday in podcast time. So it is Thursday. So less than a week ago, he slapped something like $300 billion worth of tariffs on various Chinese products. And the Chinese retaliated with some statements and other things, right? And there's a tariff on U.S. steel of something like 25%, or not U.S. steel, but steel imported to the United States on something like 25%, and some other stuff. And already I'm seeing all these stories that say, this is affecting the United States. And, you know, Mike Pence is taking this tour of the Midwest to, you know, shore up support while Trump is in Europe on this NATO thing. And he's doing it because we're seeing deleterious effects on the U.S. economy already of these trade sanctions by President Trump. Now, you can support Trump. You can hate Trump. It doesn't make any difference to me. That's not what's important because he's perfectly capable of defending himself if he wants to. But what I said was, is it possible that Trump and the Trump administration at all is attempting to push the envelope on trade to try to get better deals? Stephen Moore has already suggested that what Trump is trying to do is get zero tariffs, which is a whole other thing because many of the people that supported Trump, you know, aren't for zero tariffs. What they want is trade protection, and they want their quote-unquote jobs protected because they think China took their jobs, when in reality it was IT, for the most part, that took their jobs. That's all in that podcast, podcast 737. We don't need to go into detail on that in this podcast because it's, you know, kind of a pain in the ass to get into that much detail. See what happens when you read the news every day? You get into massive amounts of detail. But there's a spate of stories that all say this is having a deleterious effect. You know, Pence is supposedly touring the United States because farmers are, you know, already it's costing them money and everything else. And you go through every one of these stories, and there's not one concrete statistical example that says anything about the effects of the trade. The best, most honest article I saw was from, you know, I don't even know where it was from, but it said basically that in a business sense, so far, the impact of his, you know, sanctions, for lack of a better term, or increase in the tariffs has been minimal so far. And that's an honest way to put it. Yeah, there's a lot of people with opinions, and farmers, of course, have opinions on any given day. Whatever you do is wrong with farmers. You can do no right with farmers. They're always being asked as though they are somehow farmers somehow because of their, you know, exalted status as farmers, somehow have the spiritual, you know, have inherited the spiritual, you know, mantle of the nation to be able to say what the economic effects of any one thing are going to be. And I think that's actually fascinating. Oh, there's dogs out here, and they're yelling at me. Oh, he's in the yard. Okay, so I'm gonna walk up here. Anyway, you know, so the idea is, oh, that's because there's another dog. There's another dog right here. Hi, doggy. That's why he's not barking at me. He's barking at this other dog. Oh, no, that's not a dog. That's some kind of a post. Jeez, I thought it was a dog. It's not moving. Or is it? Oh, that's a fire hydrant. What was I talking about? Oh, yeah. So how the hell can all these reporters and all these writers suddenly start telling you about all the deleterious effects of Trump's trade sanctions? You know, this is disingenuous. And I think it benefits the president, because what it does is, if he withdraws these, or if they have a positive effect, in that if China basically blinks at some point, or if Canada blinks at some point, or they don't do what they say they're going to do, and the effects of these sanctions are, you know, absorbable by our economy, then these people are all going to look like idiots for saying the effects of on the economy. And of course, they all, you know, quote the go-to guy Mark Zandi on every single one of these issues. So, switching subjects, same thing is true with this NATO thing that is going on right now. Now, I'm just going to say, very important to think and understand. So if I were to go on the radio and say, okay, so we're going to talk about NATO, except here's how we're going to do this. We've got a bunch of people on hold right now. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take 5 calls, and every one of you is going to tell me the history of NATO. Bam. First call, give me a complete history of NATO. What is NATO? What does NATO mean? What does the term stand for? You know, and you'd be shocked at how little Americans know about NATO, which is a central part of U.S. foreign policy since 1948, or whenever they formed the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. This includes all the countries in Europe that we have had agreed to defend against the Russians. Now, I don't remember whether they formed the Warsaw Pact as a reaction to NATO, but NATO is a defense pact between, our former European allies and the United States. The plan was that if we ever had a war with Russia, NATO would defend Europe while the United States formed an air and sea bridge to bring U.S. troops and materials over to Europe to defend, and that there would be a fair number of U.S. troops in Europe to assemble a defense to hold the Russians in the fold a gap. If you've been in the army, you know what I'm talking about, which is, I think it's in Germany. So that would hold the Russians at the fold a gap and hopefully keep it under control so that it wouldn't go nuclear in time for the United States to get our troops over there. And Tom Clancy wrote a book about it, which was a book where he war gamed that scenario. There's also a book called World War III, August 1983, or something like that, which I read a long, long time ago, which was the same thing. It war gamed this kind of a conflict. And without getting into too much detail, the idea of NATO was we wanted to keep these European countries weak, because after the war, what we really were concerned about was those countries building back up into countries with offensive military capabilities. We felt that in order to keep the peace in Europe, the balance of power had to be restored between the chief countries of Europe, that there needed to be a common market sought, that it needed to be a free market zone. These are all things that they talked about after the war. And the idea was to keep those countries weak so that they didn't, they didn't start fighting each other. And the idea was we would pay for most, because we had to, because they didn't have the resources, we'd pay for most of the defenses and pay most of the cost of NATO. That's been the regime since after the end of World War II, right? And I guess you could say the first test of it was the Berlin, right? The Berlin airlift, right? Wasn't that the first real test of NATO? Maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know. But in any case, now with Trump going over there and demanding that these countries pay at least 2% of their GDP for defense, it's got everyone completely upset. He says we pay over 4%. I think we pay something like 3.2% of our GDP in defense. But in any case, the point here is this, and I think this is, you know, you have a bunch of young people today running around talking about, and they'll always point to Norway and they'll point to the socialist countries of Europe, and they'll say, look how well socialism has worked. Democratic socialism is working in Europe. You know, the Swiss have, or the Swedish have, you know, cradle to grave health care, and they have people, you know, they have you know, very generous unemployment plans, and they have housing, and they have all this stuff. The reason that that democratic socialism per se has been able to work so well in those countries is rather than spend 4% of their GDP on defense, they've been able to spend 4% of their GDP on those kinds of programs while the United States protected them. So you can imagine with us not having to protect Europe against Russia, you know, how much we would have had to spend on education or to spend on welfare if we wanted to. So this idea of democratic socialism is fine, as long as someone else pays for it. I just wanted to point that out. Now, I guess that's a very biased thing to say, but here's the thing. If Europe militarizes and those countries become militarily stronger, then you're going to start to get into potential armed conflicts between those European countries. And that is a dangerous situation. That's a product of World War II. We didn't want them to get that capability. Remember, France is a nuclear power. England is a nuclear power. Germany isn't, and I don't think wants to be at this time. You know, and other countries, you know, the Netherlands and everything else are part of NATO that forms the core of their defense capabilities. It doesn't mean that they don't contribute to their defense. It meant that we didn't want Germany to be strong militarily. We didn't want France to be strong militarily again because we were concerned that they would start aggressing onto themselves and we would have another European war like we had in 1918 and 1945. This is a theme in these podcasts where I've talked about this because I don't think people realize what a significant event in history World War II was. My son, who studied history, said to me a long time ago, because let's be honest, the most significant event in the 20th century and perhaps in the last 400 years was World War II, because of the scope of the scale, but also because it ended with the first use of a nuclear weapon. So it has impact far beyond the 4 years that it took to actually have that war. I thought that was really interesting. And it's one of those things that people... See, I think Trump's right to ask them to pay more for their defense in the current time frame. I don't think he's right to basically trash NATO. I have to come inside because it's raining. I don't think he's right to basically trash NATO as a concept, because this is what still defends Europe against Russian aggression. And of course, we know that the Russians are interested in gaining geographically. They want the Ukraine back, and they obviously want the Baltic states back. So, anyway, that's my take on the NATO thing. And of course, I could be more detailed, but I don't need to do that. But You know, it's just interesting. And it's interesting to see the coverage of all this stuff and to see how, because I'm reading so much more, you know, now, because I'm kind of delving back into it after. I didn't really have a news cleanse, but I'm going to tell you, I kind of would scan my phone. And that consisted, and then my friends and I go out and talk on Tuesday nights and sometimes on Saturdays. And that, you know, and then we'd end up checking things, you know, while we were talking, you know, look that up, you know, or whatever. And that was kind of my knowledge, and I was starting to feel like a senile, you know, kind of an uninformed, you know, rube. And so delving back into it is really interesting because, first of all, nothing has changed. You know, it's still the same tripe that, you know, most of it is very speculative. It's very predictive. Most of the commentary is still very oriented toward persuading people to think a certain way. Most coverage is designed to get you to take a certain point of view. Very little reporting on here's what's going on, here's the facts. They're happy to report on Republicans fighting Republicans, even though Democrats are fighting Democrats nationwide, and in particular that case in New York, Bronx, Queens congressional district, where an upstart defeated, you know, Congressman Crowley, who's like third in line for Democrat leadership. So that's just, you know, putting ripples through the entire situation. And I had a big fight with my son the other night about how I, you know, he said, oh, the Republicans are all fighting, and they are. But the same rifts in certain ways are also evident in the Democratic Party. And, I think that's very interesting. Both parties seem to be shifting and changing and rapidly. So that's an interesting thing. So that's kind of what I'm doing, is just enjoying the weather, not turning on my AC. I'm inside. Windows are open. You can't hear. I have my fan on, so I have a ceiling fan in the kitchen, thank God. That's the ceiling fan. Here comes the rain. But I also have these cool little fans that when my furnace went out, CenterPoint brought over. Yeah, so if you want to hear wind in the microphone, there you go. So I have these cool little fans that are pretty high capacity fans, and that's pretty much my air conditioning. But it enables me to be outside and enjoy being outside. So that's kind of what's going on. I wanted to get in on those top stories because I think they're really important for this weekend and this week. And the whole heat thing is just relax. This is the Midwest in the summer, and it's always been this way. I don't notice any change in smell. I don't notice any change in the number of trees or anything else. This is the Midwest. It rains, you know, at night because it's so hot during the day, and then that produces more humidity, and it's wonderful. Enjoy it. Get out in it. Live in it. Get out in the sun, for God's sake. And thanks for listening to Podcast 738. So the big air show is coming up in Oshkosh very soon. And if you are heading over there, if you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, I encourage you to check out Alpha Systems at the air show. They make the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. The bottom line is Alpha's AOA saves lives because it lets you know how much lift your wing is producing, especially on those final turns, you know, to land, etc. Click on the Alpha Systems banners at the top of the page at the Bob Davis podcasts.com to find out more about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator. It has saved lives. I've watched, you know, owner Mark Korn do his thing at EAA many, many times over the last few years, and I have seen pilots come up and talk with him about this particular issue, this final turn to land and people losing, you know, lift. It's very dangerous. And an angle of attack indicator fixes that. And every plane ought to have one of these in the cockpit. So check out Mark Korn at Alpha Systems at the EAA Air Show. And click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Look for the Alpha Systems indicators, and that will take you to their website if you want to learn more. Well, we've started to get some storm action, and I love that. So I'm going to sit here and watch the storms. Thanks for listening to Podcast 738, a walk and talk just before the storm in the Midwest at the peak of summer. Thanks for listening.